This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Joy Powers. Mobile wellness devices, the Fitbit, the Apple, or Garmin watch, are ubiquitous these days. Many of us wear them with the goal of holding ourselves accountable for our physical fitness.
They're also becoming a tool that employers are using with a separate but related goal, having healthy employees and controlling healthcare costs.
But the devices themselves are evolving and may soon make more promises than just counting your steps or keeping track of your heart rate.
And that means they could face a different kind of regulation than what governs them today. It's a topic that contributor Barbara Zabawa wrote about recently for the American Bar Association. Zabawa is the owner of the Center for Health and Wellness Law and a clinical assistant professor in the College of Health Sciences at UW-Milwaukee. Welcome back to the show. Great to see you.
So glad to be here, Mitch.
A lot of people have fitness trackers and other mobile health devices. I have a relatively basic one on my wrist. It counts my steps. It's supposed to measure my sleep, my activity level, the calories I burned. Other people have them integrated into a smartwatch. I think you may have one of those right now.
I do.
What is happening in this industry that makes it about more than people getting a fitness tracker for Christmas and keeping track of their activity?
Yes. Well, I mean, there's been a lot of talk with some wellness devices. That's what I call the Apple Watch and Fitbits and things like that, moving into more of a clinical use. So treating chronic diseases or conditions or trying to help prevent those conditions. And when wellness devices move in that direction, they just have to be more aware of the fact that they may be subject to FDA regulation, because FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, regulates medical devices. And medical devices are loosely defined as those devices that are aiming to treat or prevent disease. And so when you move away from just being a wellness device and a lifestyle kind of device, and into more of a treatment realm, then you could be subject to FDA regulation. And so that's just something that not the consumer needs to worry so much about. It's more for the manufacturer and the distributor of those devices that they'll need to be concerned about FDA regulation.
When it comes to regulation, does it make a difference whether these are consumer-driven or employer-driven reasons for wearing these devices? I mean, let's say, you know, I have a Fitbit and, you know, I'm basically using it to keep track of my steps. Does it make a difference if, you know, my doctor is asking me to wear it or my employer demands that I wear it as part of a wellness program?
Not really. What determines whether the FDA will get involved in a device is the intended use, and the intended use has to be related to treatment of disease or other illnesses, or trying to prevent diseases. And a lot of these devices do in effect do that, but the intended use really is for keeping track of your steps, as you mentioned, or smartwatches, checking your email, and there's a lot of other functionalities that take place. I mean, they also do check your heart rate, but I don't think that's the intended use of the device. To keep track of, if you're going to have a heart attack. So,
well, and I gather companies like Fitbit are increasingly seeing themselves as less about individual consumers and more as players in the larger healthcare field.
Yes, well, I think they have some desire to move into that field. It's a field full of a lot of money, and it's obviously 18% of our gross domestic product nationally. So it's quite a huge industry, and there are a lot of things that industry can do to improve outcomes, improve the health of the population. And so it makes sense that they may be looking to move out into the clinical world, but that's when the FDA comes into play, and that's just something that they need to be cognizant of, and that's what I wrote in a recent article for the American Bar Association.
Well, right, and so presumably the FDA has these regulations in place for the benefit of all of us. Beyond knowing that they're regulations, what are the kinds of things when it comes to medical devices that the FDA involves itself in?
So it's regulating, you know, it wants those devices to be registered, first of all. And ultimately, what it cares about is safety, consumer safety. So when you get into more of the clinical realm, the devices are going to, you know, maybe be more invasive, or you're going to be making claims about, you know, being able to cure or prevent. And the FDA is going to step in and make sure that what you say it will do that as safely and won't harm consumers. I mean, because that's what they care about. They don't want any device or drug, because they regulate drugs too, out in the marketplace that will hurt the consumer or give them a false belief in something.
Right. This is like the difference when we see in TV commercials between, you know, what's a medicine and what's a nutritional supplement. And, you know, obviously the disclaimer on it that that this product is not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure any disease.
Yes, right. It's a great observation.
And so presumably the same could be said for these wellness devices, especially as they develop down the road and the FDA gets more involved.
Right. I mean, so the FDA just came out actually last month with a revised guidance about wellness devices and mobile apps. I mean, there are a lot of apps out there that you can use for nutrition, for exercise, and things like that. And the FDA said that for wellness-type devices, they are not going to either consider them medical devices at all, which means they don't fall within its regulatory authority, or if they are, they could be considered medical devices, they aren't going to enforce their regulations against those devices. And they have a list that they came up with of things or similar things that they would not enforce. They would use their enforcement discretion, or that they would not consider medical devices at all. And that my article kind of goes into that as well.
You write that there are some recent examples of how companies who saw themselves in one part of the industry didn't play by the regulatory rules as they expanded into other parts of the healthcare world, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's easy to get used to a more loose regulated industry, and then when you move into a more regulated industry, which is what healthcare is, to kind of get lost or forget or not realize that you've kind of stepped into that realm.
You also write that wellness program incentives, this is a good transition because I know at one point in the history of the wellness program that we have here, it resulted in getting a fitness tracker. You write that wellness program incentives by employers could become a thing of the past.
Yeah, well, there's certainly a lot of buzz about that possibility, and what prompted that buzz was a recent court decision by the District of Columbia District Court in the AARP v. EEOC case. So the AARP sued the EEOC back in 2016 about the EEOC's rules under the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act.
A lot of letters here.
Yes. And the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act. The EEOC came up with some rules under those two laws that said employers can impose incentives, financial incentives, to encourage employees to give up their personal health information, usually through a health risk assessment or a biometric screen. So if you work for a company that asks you to fill out a survey about your health or asks you to give blood so they can figure out your glucose or cholesterol levels, they may give you some monetary reward for doing that. And the EEOC said in its rules that they could do that. The AARP disagreed and said, you know, a lot of employees, especially those with lower incomes, may not be able to afford that incentive, and you're therefore compelling them, forcing them to give up their personal health information, and we think that's against the law, the ADA in particular. So they sued and they won. And the court in December of 2017, just a month ago, basically said that the EEOC had to rewrite those rules. And one of my predictions is that the EEOC is going to have a hard time finding an incentive amount that all employees, regardless of their income, would feel would still be a voluntary wellness program.
So this is the idea, like an employer offers a certain amount of money to go through a biometric screening or mm-hmm. what have you, and the only people who feel comfortable saying, no, I don't need that, are the ones who are financially well off to begin with.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So the lower income employees may feel like they can't. That's money. That's a significant amount of money that they would lose, or they might have to pay a significant amount more for their health insurance. So they feel like they have no choice but to take the health risk assessment or go through the biometric screen. And the ADA states that, you know, if employers are going to collect that information, it has to be voluntary. And so if you start putting money into this HRA, as they call it, or biometric screen, then it may no longer feel voluntary for a lot of employees. So the EEOC has to go back to the drawing board and figure out, well, what amount of money would all employees feel that it was a voluntary activity? And I think they're going to have a hard time coming up with a number. And they have to do it later this year. And the current rules are no longer going to be in existence as of January next year. So employers, many feel may feel like they don't want to bother with the incentives. I also think that many employers will still pursue incentives and use other legal avenues to do that. And we can get into that some other time. Or but it's certainly going to be a rocky year.
Right, I think your provocative headline says we're back to the Wild West.
Yes, it's going to be there's a lot of disruption in the employee wellness marketplace right now.
Well, and so for consumers who, you know, work for employers who have these programs in place, they are still in place for the current year, right? We're talking
That's right.
about 2019 at this stage.
2019, the rules that are in place right now will no longer be in place. Something else maybe, or maybe nothing, which, again, the Wild West. So it'll be an interesting year. 2018 is turning out to be a very interesting year in that way.
Seems like it is always an interesting year to be a health and wellness lawyer.
That's right. Never a dull moment.
Well, Barbara Zabawa, thank you so much for helping us understand these things.
You are welcome. Thank you.
Barbara Zabawa is a clinical assistant professor in the College of Health Sciences at UW-Milwaukee and owns the Center for Health and Wellness Law. She's also a regular health policy contributor to Lake Effect, and you can find links to our past interviews with her and her recent article we referenced at wuwm.com.